The views expressed in this podcast are solely those of the speaker. This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not a substitute for professional medical advice from your own physician.
Hi, my name is Scott Kreiner. I'm an interventional physiatrist from Barrow Brain and Spine in Phoenix, Arizona. I'd like to introduce my colleagues, starting with Dr. Lee.
Hi, my name is Brian Lee. I'm a neurosurgeon practicing at Barrow Brain and Spine in Phoenix, Arizona.
And Dr. Roars.
Jake Roars. I'm also an interventional physiatrist practicing at Barrow Brain and Spine in Phoenix, Arizona.
And lastly, Dr. Doring.
My name is Ed Doring, and I'm a spine surgeon in Scottsdale, Arizona.
So we're going to be discussing the management of synovial cysts, which arise from facet joints. And maybe I'll have Brian kind of start by describing, what a facet joint cyst is, when it might need intervention, and how we would decide that we would need to do anything about it.
Yeah, thank you. Synovial cyst is an abnormal fluid-filled sac that arises from the synovial joint in the lumbar spine. Typically in the lumbar spine, it's a degenerative age-related process that sometimes becomes bigger and larger to the point that it creates mass effect, pinching or inducing mass effect on the nerve, causing radicular radiating symptoms on the legs, which can be debilitating to the patients despite some other conservative management they might try, which end up needing the specialist's help in terms of interventions or sometimes surgery.
Excellent. So, Jake, I think we all kind of see cysts off of facet joints. They're not always ventral. I mean, sometimes they can be in other parts of the facet joint. Do they all require management or?
Yeah, absolutely. So typically if a cyst develops posteriorly, it's not going to be impinging on any of the neural elements. And so while the development of a cyst and inflammatory fluid within the facet joint could potentially point to that being a pain generator, we don't necessarily need to do an intervention to decompress the cyst or rupture the cyst if it's not causing any radicular symptoms. Okay. But I think our focus specifically today is on those cysts that are projecting somewhat anteriorly, either into the lateral recess canal or into the foramen, and what options we have available to either rupture or aspirate the cyst.
And any biomechanical things that might make somebody more likely to have a cyst versus not?
Well, we tend to see them more often in cases with a little bit of spondylolisthesis. As most people know, looking at an MRI, one of the pathognomonic indicators of a possible spondylolisthesis is just fluid in the facet joint. And we have some suspicion that that fluid, as it increases in volume, is part of the reason we have the cyst. Mm-hmm. And so, when we're evaluating these, in addition to the neurologic evaluation, we do want to evaluate for stability, including potential spondylolisthesis.
Just to echo Dr. Doring's comment, I always get an X-ray flexion extension film to see if there's spondylolisthesis associated with this synovial cyst. And if there's true dynamic instability that's seen on that flexion extension film, then in and of itself causes some back pain as a result of instability, which typically needs to be surgically addressed if that continues to cause or induce symptoms for the patients.
And interestingly, along those lines, sometimes I'll have a patient sent to me with an MRI that shows the cyst and somebody's evaluated enough to think this could be causing a problem, but there's no spondylolisthesis. And the X-rays you're talking about end up giving us a lot more information than we would have had if we just relied on the MRI.
Right. Exactly. I think solid points, right? So, Jake, how do you decide, if you have a patient who shows up in your office that you see a cyst on an MRI scan, how do you decide whether or not you need to address that?
I think if the patient is presenting with some component of radicular symptoms that match the pattern of where the cyst is, could potentially be causing irritation to a nerve root, then I always show the patient on the image that the cyst is present. Looking at the MRI, when I'm counseling a patient on the chances of success from either aspiration or rupture, I typically will also look at T2 hyperintensity within the cyst, because there are some cysts that don't really come up hyperintense on the T2 signal. And typically in my mind, that means it's likely there's more calcium or gelatinous material within the cyst. The chances that we're going to be able to aspirate or rupture that cyst, I think, are less. And the chance that we can make that cyst completely go away with permanence through interventional techniques is lower. So I always try to counsel patients on that. But in somebody who has a synovial cyst that's compressing a neural element, I counsel them that, you know, we can potentially do an aspiration or a cyst rupture. And I tell them both because sometimes when we get in there and try to do an aspiration, the fluid's not coming out of the cyst. And so I like to have the option to be able to perform a rupture depending on how things are going in the fluoro suite.
Gotcha. And Dr. Lee, same question to you. So you get a patient in your office and let's say they've got a radiculopathy, L5 radic coming from a 4-5 paracentral facet cyst. How do you decide, you know, this needs surgical management or maybe we can try an interventional approach to managing the cyst?
MRI will give us a lot of information, whether it's just pure fluid filled sac versus is it calcified, is it, you know, chronically inflamed, causing a lot of adhesions or, you know, inflammation around the cyst. If it looks like it can be aspirated or ruptured, you know, I think the first line of treatment always is, can we try to avoid surgery? So I need to rely on my colleagues' expertise to see if injections can be tried first, if they can be aspirated first, to see if we can make that go away. Obviously, if it's associated with instability or spondylolisthesis, then that's potentially a surgical candidate for fusion for stabilization. But if that's not the case, and if it's just the pure mass that's induced by the fluid sac, the cyst, causing nerve pinching or compression, then I think a non-surgical management should be tried first.
We have a couple studies looking at how we manage the facet cyst from a rupture standpoint, from an interventional standpoint, you know, and one's a retrospective case series, another is a prospective study looking at this. And what they show is somewhere between 70% and 80% have successful relief of their pain with mm-hmm. non-surgical management. About 40% of the patients will require a second cyst rupture, and then somewhere around 30% to 40% of the patients will require surgical intervention, meaning that they failed these treatments. And so I think as interventionalists, for us, we kind of have some guidelines on, you know, we can try it maybe once or twice, but don't keep wasting time if it's not working, right? We can send it off.
Yeah.
Ed, what do you think the best surgical approach is? I mean, do you decide that we'll just go in and take the cyst out? Do you need to remove some of the facet joint? Do you actually need to do a fusion and try to stabilize the segment? I mean, how do you make a surgical decision on what you're gonna do?
There is not a lot of literature on this. There's only a few studies that have tried to look at it. None of them are level one or two evidence. But in the Journal of the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, December 2016, Booty and Savage did a meta-analysis of the literature that was available. And it showed that without spondylolisthesis, as Dr. Lee was talking about, where you might consider a fusion, with laminectomy, medial facetectomy alone, 90% success, with only about 6% of people needing to come back for a reoperation. And so we have a pretty good literature base, even though not the level of evidence we might want, that shows us that a decompression is probably the way to go on the first, you know, round at least, unless they have pre-existing spondylolisthesis. Mm-hmm. So that's typically what I'll do is a minimally invasive tubular retractor. You know, it's basically the same thing as a discectomy almost, except obviously the facet cyst is a little trickier than a disc usually because often they're adherent to the dura. Mm-hmm. And then for us, it's a little bit of a, can we separate it from the dura or can we leave a little bit of that cyst behind? As long as there's no bone pushing on it, patient will usually do well.
Right. I also look at the MRI to see how, you know, the morphology of the synovial cyst, the size and the location of the cyst to kind of help me to kind of determine what kind of surgical approach I need to take. If, as Dr. Growing mentioned, if the patient can be managed without fusion, I think that should be tried first, especially in the absence of spondylolisthesis or instability. And if it's a pure decompressive procedure, we just, you know, if it looks like it's adhered a lot to the dura, then I prefer to do more of an open approach to be able to kind of dissect around the cyst because it, as you mentioned, it tends to be stuck or adhere to the dura, which puts the patient at higher risk for durotomy and CSF leakage. And direct visualization and the access to the contralateral side helps us to primarily repair it if that ever happens.
What degree of instability, like do you have a cutoff? You say, okay, well, they've got 3 millimeters of motion and that motion seems to be causing the cyst to form versus, they've got, 8 millimeters of motion. Is there a number that you look at when somebody's got a cyst that says, okay, I probably should add a fusion onto this?
Yeah. The extent of spondylolisthesis matters, but what matters to me the most is actually the presence of spondylolisthesis upon standing, the upright film, which was not seen in a supine film such as MRI or the CT, but it's present on the X-ray, which might worsen on flexion and gets reduced on an extension. That's in and of itself a mobile spondylolisthesis or dynamic instability, in which case I think there's a component of a mechanical back pain caused by that. So, which means that's one of the patients that might need to be surgically operated for fusion surgery.
And Dr. Lee makes another good point. Most of these cysts are at L4-5, and the facet joint is a little more coronally oriented there. But if the cyst is higher up, and as he was saying, he looks at the morphology, if it's more sagittally oriented, we're gonna have to take more of the facet joint. And now sometimes there's even an intraoperative decision. If we can leave the other side stable, patient's probably gonna do okay. But if we have to take most of the joint, then we would consider fusion.
That's a great point, because if the joints are sagittally oriented, it allows you to slip even further or easier than coronally oriented joints.
Sure. Excellent. So you're doing a facet cyst rupture. Like for an interventionalist standpoint, what precautions do you take? What are the risks? What do you tell your patient, before you get into this?
Yeah, so I always tell them, the same risks that apply with most of the procedures that we do exist: infection, bleeding, bruising, potential for nerve injury. With this, I always like to counsel my patients on the possibility that during the procedure, typically I don't sedate patients for this procedure. If anything, I'll give them some oral sedation, but it's usually pretty well tolerated. If we eventually need to do the rupture, I always like to counsel patients that it may become uncomfortable as we're filling the cyst with contrast and with saline. I let them know that in advance, and I'll let them know that while we're doing the procedure that potentially could happen. I typically do an epidural steroid injection to the affected nerve root as well, with the goal of, if there was inflammatory fluid inside of the cyst that we're now rupturing, that could potentially be irritating the nerve root after we perform the rupture. So doing the epidural can cause some washout and give an anti-inflammatory effect around that nerve to hopefully decrease any post-procedural pain for the patient.
Gotcha. And I know you and I, when we practice, we don't normally stop anticoagulants for a facet procedure or a transforaminal epidural. Do you think the same is true for this, or would you hold anticoagulants for these procedures?
I do not. Yeah. I do not hold anticoagulants or antiplatelet agents for this. It's definitely something that I've considered multiple times, but I do not hold for this procedure.
Yeah, I think we don't have really clear evidence on that right now, but it's one of those things that we ponder, right? Because if it's in the canal and you're rupturing the cyst, does it increase the risk of, epidural hematoma?
Sometimes surgically, when we're looking in there, you'll see some very large dural veins.
Yeah.
It's mostly because, there's just no room and there's a back pressure.
Yeah.
And then, so we end up having to deal with those. Mm-hmm. And I can imagine possibility
right.
for you guys, getting that also.
Yeah, exactly. So that, I think when we're messing with anatomy in the canal, it's one of those things that we always have to be thoughtful of. So, mm-hmm. Anything else that either of you would like to add or bring up?
No, I think we had a great conversation about how to manage synovial cyst, which is often manifested in patients that have age-related degenerative process. And, our patient population is getting older and older. By 2050, I think 30 to 40% of our patients will be elderly patients who often have degenerative issues. So this is something that, you know, a lot of patients should be well informed about, whether it's by the physiatrist, patient, or physicians, or the surgeons, and, you know, manage properly based on what the pathology is and what's really creating the symptoms.
Not much to add. I think we've covered, you know, the basics. There, obviously, there is literature on this, and I, you know, think people who haven't read it should at least look through it. A couple good, you know, summary type papers that look at the literature. The one I mentioned earlier with Booty and Savage. I mean, I just think it gives you a good background going in.
Yeah, the two studies in interventional spine, one is by Greg Lutz, and the other is by Dave Wong's group out of Colorado that look at the case series of this for interventional management.
So excellent.
Yeah, excellent. Jake, anything to add?
The one other thing that I would say, and I don't want to steal the thunder from you, but you know, we typically can perform an aspiration, a rupture, where we're just accessing the facet joint directly and putting pressure in. But there's also the second technique where we can advance a second needle and kind of fenestrate the cyst. I don't want to steal the thunder since you were the one who taught me that. I don't know if you want to describe that technique.
Yeah, so that technique, there's at least a case description of it in the literature. There's not really much about it. But one of the nice things that you know, experienced interventionalists can do is when you fill the facet joint, you just do a facet joint approach and put contrast in there. You can visualize the cyst oftentimes is because it's coming off the facet. And by obliquing the C-arm off, you can see the lamina and often the cyst sitting underneath the lamina. And you can take a contralateral approach with the needle and come directly into the cyst. And typically you'll use a little bit larger needle angled up towards the lamina, and you can tear the cyst, maybe causing a little bit less likelihood of that returning. I think it, you know, that procedure definitely would require stopping anticoagulants because you've definitely got a needle in the canal. But it's, you know, and we do a similar thing because sometimes the cysts are out in the foramen and the same, using that same approach is, you know, you can come out with the needle laterally out in the foramen and actually tear the cyst open. And sometimes it works better than others. Like sometimes the cysts, as you guys know, when you're in there, they're really thick and they don't want to give. But other times it's very effective and very gratifying to see the fluid leak out and then explode, and it's kind of fun. So.
One of the few times we like to see an explosion.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, thank you all for your time. I really appreciate it, and hopefully the audience has gained something from this. So.
Thank you.